This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. The United States and NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg said Wednesday that Russia is boosting its military buildup and encircling much of Ukraine, despite its claims that it's withdrawing some troops. State Department spokesman Ned Price told reporters, quote, more Russian forces, not fewer, are on the Ukrainian border and they're moving into fighting positions. In Brussels, Stoltenberg said, we have heard the signs from Moscow about readiness to continue diplomatic efforts. But so far, we have not seen any de-escalation on the ground. On the contrary, it appears that Russia continues its military buildup. U.S. and Ukrainian officials say they've not seen any evidence of a Russian pullback of some of the 150,000 troops deployed on the northern, eastern, and southern borders of the former Soviet Republic. A senior administration official said in recent days Russia has added as many as 7,000 troops near the Ukrainian border. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken denounced Wednesday a move by Russian legislators to recognize two Russian-supported breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine as independent. Russia's lower house voted Tuesday to ask President Vladimir Putin to recognize the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, which declared independence from Ukraine in 2014. The European Union urged Moscow not to follow through on the vote by the State Duma. Blinken said enactment of the resolution would constitute what he called a gross violation of international law. He warned that such a move would force a swift and firm response from the United States and coordination with its allies and partners. Russia has denied any plans to invade Ukraine and has accused the West of inflaming tensions. VOA News. Police in the Canadian capital, Ottawa, on Wednesday started warning truck drivers blockading the downtown core that they should leave or face arrest. It was part of a crackdown meant to end a three-week-old protest over COVID-19 restrictions. Federal Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino blamed extremist groups for helping organize protests in Ottawa and at U.S. border crossings and repeated suggestions that some actors wanted to overthrow Canada's Liberal government. Police in the province of Alberta this week arrested 13 people linked to a border blockade and seized their guns. Four members of the group have been charged with conspiracy to commit murder. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on Monday invoked the Little Used Emergencies Act, giving Canada's Liberal government more powers to end the protest. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration said Wednesday that a total of 80 unruly airplane passengers have been referred to the FBI for potential criminal prosecution as onboard disruptions rose sharply in 2021. Many of those disruptions, the FAA said, were over COVID-19 mask requirements. The FAA said more than 4,500 of the 6,400 unruly passenger reports it has received since the start of 2021 involve passengers not wearing a mask as required. The Justice Department said it's giving priority to investigations and prosecutions of people who commit crimes that threaten the safety of passengers, flight crews, and flight attendants. Some airlines and labor unions have called for a no-fly list that would ban passengers with a record of disruptions. Rescue workers and city officials in the Brazil mountain city of Petropolis say the death toll from landslides driven by torrential rain has risen to at least 78. Officials say 21 people have been found alive, but the mayor of Petropolis warned that the death toll could rise. Rescue workers and volunteers are still searching for survivors and victims. The local weather agency said torrential rainfall on Tuesday turned some streets of the city into rivers. Some areas got nearly 26 centimeters in less than 6 hours, and that's more than was expected for the entire month. Officials say as many as 80 houses have been destroyed and at least 300 people displaced. The United States is in the midst of the final stages of indirect talks with Iran aimed at salvaging the 2015 deal limiting Tehran's nuclear activities. This according to State Department spokesman Ned Price on Wednesday. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today's Thursday, February 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, NATO says it has evidence Russia has not pulled back its forces around Ukraine's border, despite assurances from Moscow.
The Ministry of Defense released several videos purporting to show tanks and troops withdrawing from the Ukrainian border region after completing military drills.
Pakistan's security forces step up sweeps and raids amid growing deadly militant attacks.
The attack by militants have really increased in southwestern Balochistan province, which shares border with Afghanistan and Iran.
And 58 people are killed in mudslides and floods that swept through a region of Rio de Janeiro state in Brazil. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia reiterated Wednesday that it has begun withdrawing some troops from close to the Ukrainian border. This, as Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told reporters at a meeting of NATO's defense ministers in Brussels, that the alliance can prove Russia's failure to withdraw troops with satellite images. The Kremlin says NATO's assessment was wrong, but many Western nations say there's little evidence of a pullback and fear an invasion of Ukraine is still imminent. Henry Ridgewell reports.
This is the image Russia wants to show to the world. The Ministry of Defense released several videos purporting to show tanks and troops withdrawing from the Ukrainian border region after completing military drills. Moscow has mocked Western claims that it would invade Ukraine this week and maintains it has no plans to conduct any such operation. Meeting German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Moscow Tuesday, Russia's President Vladimir Putin denied he was seeking conflict. He said, "Do we want it or not? Of course not. That is why we have offered our proposals to start the negotiation process, which should lead to an agreement of providing equal security for everybody, including our country." German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said, "It's now about solving this crisis peacefully in a courageous and decisive way. It is a good sign that we are hearing some of the troops are being withdrawn. We hope much more signs will follow." But details of the Russian withdrawal are scarce. Footage posted to social media Tuesday, verified by Reuters, appeared to show field hospitals being transported towards the Ukrainian border. British Defence Minister Ben Wallace.
We saw large field hospitals being built in a number of districts around Ukraine, and indeed we saw continued deployment from holding areas into more forward areas.
US intelligence officials have warned that Russia could stage a false flag attack in the rebel-held Donbass region. Some experts agree. Maria Avdeva is from the European Expert Association in Kiev.
What Russia could do is stage some kind of Ukrainian attack and then say that the Russian citizens in Donbass need to be protected and use Russian military for that.
Under the looming threat of invasion, Ukrainians took to the streets Wednesday in a day of unity. Kiev resident Olena Kotenko said, "Our power is that we understand the situation we are in, and our power lies in the fact we became stronger than we were in 2014. Fellow Kiev resident Yuri Maestrenko said, "Russia will not leave us in peace. That's why we have to always be ready for it." And Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky posted this message on social media. "Nobody will love our home as much as we do," he said, "and nobody can defend our home as we can." Meanwhile, in the east, Ukrainian forces are preparing to defend their homeland. The rhetoric may have cooled slightly, but the threat of war remains high. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
With Russia poised to invade Ukraine, U.S. Secretary of State Lloyd Austin is in Belgium for 2 days of talks with NATO leadership and allied defense ministers. Tens of thousands of Russian troops have surrounded Ukraine from the north, south and east. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb has more from Brussels.
a potentially imminent invasion from a familiar foe. 150,000 Russian troops amassed on Ukraine's borders. The territorial integrity of one of NATO's eastern neighbors at stake. Retired Lieutenant General Ben Hodges is the former commander of U.S. Army Europe.
I think of a boa constrictor that is squeezing Ukraine to force the government of President Zelensky to blink, to make some giant concession.
At NATO, defense leaders showing a unified alliance this week with meetings focused on deterring Russia. Bradley Bowman is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
This really is a decisive moment for NATO, the likes of which we have not really seen potentially since NATO was established in 1949.
U.S. fighter jets ready to monitor the skies on NATO's eastern flank. An American aircraft carrier in the Adriatic Sea for the first time in decades. Thousands of additional U.S. troops deployed to Poland and Romania. All as Russian legislators Tuesday urged Russian President Vladimir Putin to formally recognize the separatist-controlled regions of eastern Ukraine as independent states, a move Putin could use to try to justify an incursion in an area it no longer recognizes as Ukraine's territory. But U.S. President Joe Biden warned Tuesday of severe economic and political consequences should Russia invade Ukraine.
It'll be met with overwhelming international condemnation. The world will not forget that Russia chose needless death and destruction. Invading Ukraine will prove to be a self-inflicted wound.
Russia now says it is pulling back troops from Ukraine's border, although the president says the U.S. could not yet confirm Moscow's claim. Carla Babb, VOA News, Brussels.
Pakistan's security forces are stepping up raids and sweeps in some areas of the country amid escalating attacks by militants and separatist groups. In recent weeks, attacks have increased in the country's restive provinces, raising fears of more violence that has claimed the lives of dozens of security personnel. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gar.
The attack by militants have really increased in southwestern Balochistan province, which shares border with Afghanistan and Iran. And that's where we have seen almost daily attacks against Pakistani security forces. There were two simultaneous attacks against paramilitary forces bases in Balochistan, two different districts, but simultaneous attacks by these Baloch militants who have been basically fighting for the total independence of this Pakistani province, which is rich in mineral resources. The militants engaged Pakistani security forces physically for almost 72 hours. In both the attacks, 20 militants were killed. What we understand from our discussions with officials is that there were intercepts that the intelligence agency of Pakistan gathered militants and their handlers in Afghanistan and also across the border in Iran, that they were being guided and controlled from these two locations, which they say means that the Pakistani Taliban, which has bases in Afghanistan, is now helping the Baloch militants who are also using their bases in the Iranian border areas. And yesterday, the Pakistani president in a local television interview said that the military has informed him that these attacks that are being carried out in Balochistan, the militants are using sophisticated night vision weapons that were left behind by NATO and American forces in Afghanistan, and apparently they have fallen in the hands of these militants, and that's why they have been able to inflict these massive casualties on Pakistani security forces.
So what is the security plans of the government? What is the government doing to try not just to deter, but to stop this rising violence and attacks on security forces?
Well, two things have happened. One was that there have been regular contacts with the new rulers of Afghanistan, the Taliban, where Pakistani officials have even in public statements condemned the use of Afghan soil against Pakistan under the Taliban government. And secondly, yesterday there was a high-profile visit from Iran. The interior minister of Iran visited Pakistan for one day, where he held meetings with the Pakistani prime minister and the military leadership. And And the statements issued after those meetings clearly suggest that Pakistan conveyed to the Iranian side that their side of the border is being used against Pakistan. So the joint statement suggested that both sides have now established a special task force to deal with the security challenges along their common border. And secondly, we see that security in urban centers have been intensified, increased. But obviously, as long as these leaders of these militant groups are, using sanctuaries in Afghanistan and in Iran, whether the respective governments in these two countries are supporting them or not, this will be a challenge.
If these attacks continue, is it likely to affect bilateral relations between Pakistan and Afghanistan and maybe China?
Pakistan supported the Taliban who are ruling now Afghanistan, but there are concerns in Islamabad that maybe Taliban are not really living up to their commitments to counter terrorism in Afghanistan. And this rise in attack clearly is a cause of concern for Pakistan. And for the first time last week, when a couple of attacks occurred, in one attack, five Pakistani soldiers were killed by terrorists, according to Pakistani officials, from inside Afghanistan. So the relationship supposedly should be good between the current government in Afghanistan and Pakistan, because we know that Pakistan has long supported the Taliban in their insurgency against the U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan. But whatever has happened in the last few weeks, this rise in attacks and originating in Afghanistan against Pakistan definitely has strained the relationship.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gao speaking with me from Islamabad. As Libya's parliament, which meets in the eastern city of Tobruk, prepares to approve a new national unity government next week, the country's High Council of State says that the legislature should have consulted it before removing outgoing Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibe. Dbeibe is refusing to step down, and it is not clear how the situation will evolve. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
To say that Libya's political situation is confused would be an understatement. Both outgoing Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibah and former Interior Minister Fathi Bashagha, the man named by Parliament to replace him, enjoy significant support among militia forces which control large chunks of western Libya. Both men are also from the western port city of Misrata, where divided loyalties make it even more unclear which man will prevail. Khalid al-Mishri, who heads the country's Tripoli-based High Council of State, is contesting the legitimacy of the new government. However, Parliament, based in the eastern city of Tobruk, insists that outgoing Prime Minister Dbeibah's mandate ran out on December 24, and that the popularly elected body, whose mandate also ran out, has the authority to name a successor. Fathi Melami, an advisor to Libyan Parliament Speaker Aguila Saleh, insists that the new government under Bashagha will govern no matter what anyone says, because Parliament has the authority to appoint him. He says the new government becomes official as soon as Parliament gives it a vote of confidence. Even if Dbeibah doesn't vacate his current offices, he says, there are other offices for Bashagha to use elsewhere. Parliament has made its decision, he adds, and the new government will take over once approved. Mohamed Hamouda, spokesman for outgoing Prime Minister Dbeibah and his government, however, insists that the move to appoint a new government was not made by Parliament in consultation with the High Council of State and is therefore not legal. He says that it is the responsibility of the High Council of State to appoint a new Prime Minister, and Parliament must approve his new government. Moves made by Parliament, he argues, were made unilaterally without consulting the Council of State. Libya security analyst Aya Burwaila tells VOA that opposition to the new government appears to be limited, with the exception of two Islamist militias led by Sadiq Garyani and Salah Badi. She adds that Bashagha must offer a plan to integrate all militias into the existing national army and begin trust-building measures, given the difficulties of the task. At the moment, the situation in most of Libya remains calm, and none of the militia forces on the ground appears to have reacted very strongly to the appointment of a new prime minister. That, however, could change once parliament gives a vote of confidence to Fathi Bashagha's new government, and he is given the actual task of governing. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In other news, local authorities say the death toll from mudslides and floods that swept through a mountainous region of Rio de Janeiro state has reached 58. The city of Petropolis was struck by a deluge on Tuesday, and there are fears the toll could rise higher as searchers check damaged areas. The department says the region got just over 10 inches of rain within 3 hours. That is almost as much as during the previous 30 days combined. Video posted on social media show cars and houses being dragged away by landslides and water flowing through Petropolis and neighboring districts. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. The whereabouts of Lebanon's central bank head, Riyad Salameh, are not known, and observers say he appears to be on the run after police raided his office and two homes. A Lebanese judge has issued a subpoena earlier this month for Salameh to appear for questioning after he failed to attend 3 hearings. Salameh has come under intense scrutiny since the collapse of Lebanon's banking sector in 2019. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
Lebanese investigative judge Ghada Aoun told the Associated Press that Central Bank Governor Riyad Salameh failed to show up for questioning for a fourth time on Tuesday. She alleges Salameh is defying judicial orders because he has protection from the ruling elite. A senior judicial official told Dubai's The National Newspaper that the state security tried to bring Salameh in for questioning, but that he was not under arrest. A Lebanese anti-corruption group known as the People Want to Reform the System have filed a lawsuit against Salameh, accusing him of embezzlement, wasting public funds, illegal enrichment, and money laundering, according to media reports. Meanwhile, Germany, Luxembourg, France, Liechtenstein, and Switzerland are also investigating him on suspicion of money laundering. Many Lebanese believe the banker is in part responsible for Lebanon's dire financial crisis, which has seen the national currency lose more than 90% of its value, debt grow, and foreign reserves dry up. Denying any wrongdoing, Salameh has accused Judge Aoun of bias. News reports quote Salameh as saying he has asked for an audit of transactions and investments during his tenure that he says found no misuse of public money. The 71-year-old central bank governor has held his position for nearly 3 decades, receiving support from many politicians, including Prime Minister Najib Mikati. Professor Habib Malik of the Lebanese American University tells VOA that Salameh is seen as part of the wider problem involving the corrupt political elite.
All of this focus on Salameh, he's basically the facilitator, he's the accountant. He's the one who held some of these crooks over many years, and certainly in 2019, to hide their money and take it out of the country. But they've been doing this for years before. They are the real source of the problem. I think he has a lot of information that can be very damaging to a lot of these people. But at the same time, I think he's also fearful for his life.
The United States has initiated a number of actions to help Lebanon combat corruption. They have included placing sanctions in recent years on politicians such as former Foreign Minister Gibran Basile, whom U.S. officials in 2020 said had played a major role in corruption in Lebanon. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
In the Negev Desert in January, violent clashes broke out between Bedouin Arab villagers and Israeli police after the Israeli government planted thousands of trees on land the Bedouins consider their own. The incident threatened to topple the fragile government coalition, which depends on the support of an Israeli Arab party. The crisis is being mediated, but is yet another example of the anger many Bedouins in Israel carry. Linda Granstein and Ricky Rosen report from the Negev Bedouin village of Al-Zanouk.
The clashes between Bedouin Arab villagers and Israeli police were the most violent in years. The government said they were merely planting trees on land that belongs to the State of Israel. But the Bedouins said the move was a land grab designed to take even more of their tribal land. Today, there are about 300,000 Bedouin Arabs living in the Negev Desert in southern Israel. About 60,000 of them live in 35 villages, which are called unrecognized. About 6,000 Bedouins live in the unrecognized village of Az-Zarnouk, most from the same extended family which has lived here for at least five generations. Since the entire village is considered illegal, Israeli bulldozers have repeatedly demolished homes here. For the first time in history, the current Israeli government coalition includes an Arab party led by Mansour Abbas. He promised to improve Bedouin living conditions, including legalization of the 35 unrecognized villages. Recently, the government voted to recognize three of them, but wants to demolish others, including Az-Zarnouk. The policy of all previous Israeli governments has been to resettle Bedouins in state built towns, but most Bedouins say they will not give up their claims to rural lands. The political fight between the Bedouins and their supporters and detractors in the government goes on. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Az-Zarnouk.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. February marks 6 months since the Taliban's takeover of Kabul. How has the U.S. troop withdrawal and Taliban rule altered the U.S. approach to Afghanistan? We'll ask two South Asian experts to analyze the state of play and how Washington can alleviate the grave humanitarian situation in Afghanistan. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including Russia announcing some of their troops would return to base after completing recent drills, but stressed that other major military exercises would continue. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinenwofa in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One issue emerging from Russia's aggression against Ukraine is the question of energy supply. Russia supplies Ukraine as well as Central, Southern, and Western Europe with natural gas through many pipelines, several of which traverse Ukraine. As Russia's massive military buildup around Ukraine's borders and in Russia-occupied Crimea and Russia-controlled parts of the Donbas continues, Russia is also throttling gas delivery, a provocative move that it began last summer. The U.S. European Union Energy Council stated during its meeting on February 7th that it is unacceptable to use energy supply as a weapon or geopolitical lever. Thus, the United States and the European Union agreed once again to work together to address any potential threat to energy supply in the European Union or in its vicinity. Indeed, Russia has used a stoppage of gas delivery as a cudgel in the past. When Russia halted gas supplies to Europe over a dispute with Ukraine in 2009, people died from the cold, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
When energy supplies fail, economies falter. We're determined to prevent that from happening and to mitigate the impact on energy supplies and prices should Russia choose to cut natural gas supplies to Europe.
We're taking steps to ensure that the global energy supply isn't disrupted. That, too, is an important focus should Russia choose to weaponize its natural gas by cutting supply to Europe even more than it's already done, said Secretary Blinken.
We're in discussions with governments and major producers around the world about surging their capacity. We're engaged in detailed conversations with our allies and partners about coordinating our response, including how best to deploy their existing energy stockpiles. All this effort is aimed at mitigating price shocks and ensuring that people in the United States, Europe, and around the world have the energy they need, no matter what Russia decides to do.
The United States and the European Union support a strong and resilient Ukraine, and both know that energy security is vital to a sovereign Ukraine. Energy security is tied directly to national security, regional security, global security. Europe needs reliable and affordable energy, especially in the winter months, said Secretary Blinken. We're working together to protect Europe's energy supply against supply shocks, including those that could result from further Russian aggression against Ukraine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba-ba-bo-zip.